Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. This is why you feel out of control of yourself, because you are. Your automatic responses are taking over. And then later on, all you can do is really look back and be like, damn, what the fuck did I just do?
Welcome to Shift Talking, a podcast where we explore the art and science of behavior change. I'm your host, Davina Hain, a mental health coach and founder of A Steady Space. Join me as we discuss actionable tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you create lasting change once and for all. Now, let's get to the Shift Talking. Hi, and welcome to episode 10 of Shift Talking. Today is all about the neurochemistry of anger, and I cannot wait to get into these details. Last episode, episode 9, we were able to understand why we need to devillainize anger and view it for the protective emotion that it really is. Today, we're going to go into the science of anger, what happens within our brain, what happens within our body, and also what to do with it while applying the Shift framework. So let's jump in. It is so important to know this because when we're talking about the difference between a willingness and an incapability to regulate ourselves, to not act outside of ourselves when we get angry, we have to understand what's really coming into play here. Much of this is going to seem like it's a willingness, right? You want to act different, so just act different. But what we fail to recognize is how much of this is really an incapability based on these neural structures. And along with that, comes the recognition that it's an incapability for now, and that you carry all of the power in modifying and changing this. There is a massive difference between explanation and excuse. This is giving you rich data that you can take in order to understand what is happening within your brain and your body when these things come through, what to do about them, so you don't feel so out of control anymore. Because right now, you are. And you have full power, full control, full autonomy, full agency to modify these things and change what happens within your brain and your body. And that is so incredibly powerful. So I hope that you take all of the content today and you really use that as a way to protect yourself, to advocate for yourself, to stop leading this life of regret. And as we go through this, you are going to learn so much about how anger is stored within our body and how we can kind of release that in order to make room for more of the regulation, more of the balance and the steady that we can build and really be able to carry through our existence for ourselves. So first, we're going to go into the science of anger, the impact that that anger has on our body. And then we will go into realistic ways that we can manage our anger using our Shift framework. Let's start with the science of anger. This is going to focus mainly on two structures within our brain, which are the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. The amygdala is deep, deep within our brain. It's like within the core of our brain. It's also part of our reptilian brain. So it's one of our first structures to form. It is part of our survival. This is pure instinct, right? And our prefrontal cortex, which is more of our evolved brain, it's more of our logical brain. So when you view the difference between these, I want you to understand that the amygdala is more about the emotion. And our prefrontal cortex, I will refer to as PFC moving forward, because prefrontal cortex is a mouthful and I'm likely to flub here and there. And our PFC is this logical brain. Our PFC is the part that when we talk about our brains not being fully formed until we are X age, that is the part that we're talking about. And that comes with time, with experience, with a lot of practice. Our amygdala, our body's alarm system, triggers the anger response when it perceives a threat. This is a very sensitive area that is responsible for our recognition of emotions And then it works along with a structure called the hippocampus that's responsible for storing our memories. Campus, knowledge, memory, right? So I want you to picture the amygdala like the ink, and the hippocampus is the stamp, okay? So when our amygdala fires, how strongly it recognizes this emotional response within us, that is going to stamp and imprint this memory within our hippocampus and tie that emotion to that memory. So when we are, you know, reflecting back on our lives and we talk about like our top embarrassing moments, those top embarrassing moments are because the amygdala was firing at such a degree because we experienced such a deep level of emotion, a strong sense of emotion, and it tied to this memory, that strong emotion, and it got imprinted, stamped into our memory really hard. Which is also why these embarrassing moments will keep us up at night versus the dozens that we had that were neutral, maybe a positive neutral that just didn't imprint as hard. So our amygdala is responsible for so much of our survival. It's really constantly kind of assessing for threats. It's trying to understand what's happening within our environment and pick up on these subtleties that will allow for us to keep ourselves safe. And then, of course, that's where the hippocampus comes in and helping us remember these things. So what I want you to really focus on here is the fact that the amygdala has such a strong say in what we experience and why and how long we hold those memories true. It's not only about going through life experiencing these things and kind of creating new memories as we go. The amygdala is also able to recall these memories of, oh, right, the last time I went near the stove, it was a little bit hot and I got burned, so I'm just going to stay away from things that resemble stoves, right? So it's not only about new memories, it's also really remembering old memories and tying that same expectation, that same expected emotional response to these things within our environment. And that's a very important part, and I really want you to hold on to that, okay? Next is our prefrontal cortex. Our prefrontal cortex is more within like the outer part of our brain. It's like right behind our forehead. It's not as, you know, tied to our core. Our prefrontal cortex builds and grows over time through lived experience. Prefrontal cortex is responsible for our decision-making, weighing our pros and cons, knowing whether I'm going to regret this or not, knowing whether I'm overreacting or not. It's really just allowing for this part to kind of bring in a level of logic, foresight, forward thinking, really just protecting us in these types of ways that the amygdala just overly protects us emotionally. And our PFC is going to likely kind of try to remedy that and be like, okay, well, like, let's really consider all of our options here, right? It's going to help us take our experiences from the past and use our best judgment to consciously respond. So with that, and knowing that our amygdala comes first, this is our survival instinct, and then later on comes the logic behind the PFC. I think we can all recognize why kids are, you know, really just really big emotional beings with very little ability to regulate because they are living within their reptilian brain. They're living within their amygdala firing and just not really knowing what to do with it. And then as we get older, we get new and different experiences. We live with regrets. We recognize what works, what doesn't. And that's really the role of our PFC for that executive functioning for us to be able to use our best judgment moving forward. So we have a couple different scenarios that these two structures work together, where the amygdala fires and either the PFC can kind of remedy it and hold it down, or where it can't. And if the PFC can't, it's what's called an amygdala hijack, where the amygdala, because it's firing so intensely, it hijacks the blood supply, it hijacks the energy from the PFC, and it pulls it into the amygdala, pulls it back into the core of the body, and you just run with it. That's our fight or flight. It's shutting down our frontal lobe. We see them literally go dark in MRIs, and the amygdala runs the show, which is why when we get angry, our logic, our reasoning, our respect for the other people, our ability to consider whether this is really going to bother me 15 minutes or 15 days from now is completely lost. And this is where I'm talking about the willingness versus incapability. Once your amygdala hijacks, you are no longer thinking for yourself. Similar to how we talked about last episode about our anger really just attempting to keep us safe and then our aggression comes through, this is why the aggression comes through. Because our amygdala can't tell the difference between a physical threat of a lion in the wild and the work deadline that your boss is coming up to you and saying that you're behind on. They're both threats to our existence. They're both threats to our experience, our sense of self, our ability to provide for ourselves financially. And, you know, there's so much that goes into play here. But this is the amygdala that's running that show. So what our responsibility is to build the prefrontal cortex stronger so that when the amygdala fires, it has a fighting chance. It can fight against this amygdala from pulling all of its energy away from it and running it, right? So as we build the PFC, we will then have a new ability to kind of overpower the amygdala itself using logic and reason and all of these types of things. A lot of our sense of self is going to come from here. Our ability to feel like we can manage hard things is what is going to allow for our PFC to grow bigger, stronger, more neural pathways, and really be able to overpower the amygdala. But until then, this is why you feel out of control of yourself, because you are. Your automatic responses are taking over. And then later on, all you can do is really look back once the PFC comes back online and look back and be like, damn, what the fuck did I just do? I saw red. I had tunnel vision. I wasn't even paying attention. I didn't even think about what I was doing or how I was treating you. And it sounds like an excuse, but it's not. It is an explanation for your behavior, and you are fully responsible for what you do with it. You aren't to blame for the fact that maybe you weren't given the coaching that all of us need as children in order to build up this PFC and kind of understand what's happening and use our logic to outweigh our emotion. And you aren't to blame for the fact that you didn't receive that. You are still responsible, though, for what you do with it. You are still responsible for that, for your actions and the fact that you are built this way. So now you get to decide, how am I going to modify this moving forward? The PFC is going to allow for so much of that. And so that's why we'll get into that in the third section where we go through the shift framework. But I really just want you to see that as the amygdala being this like really strong, strong, visceral, innate emotion, and the PFC being this fully logical, like, hold on, hang on, how much does this really matter to me? How important is this? What am I doing with the way that I'm responding? How is the way that I'm responding making this worse for us? How can we find a new remedy? And here's where we move into the second section of today, which is the impact that it has on the body. And that impact, you guys, is so substantial. When we are talking about the amygdala, being able to put our body into fight, flight, freeze, that is such a strong experience. Think back to the last time you got upset, right? You likely noticed that your heart started racing, you started shaking, your breathing got more shallow, you likely got more tunnel vision and more impatient. You might feel kind of heat rise within your neck and come up to your temples. You can feel your body like getting amped. Right? Like getting ready. That's why we tend to stand up when we're angry. It's why we tend to make our bodies bigger when we're angry. We tend to like talk a lot more with our hands. We might even like hit our fist into the open palm of our other hand. It's why we clap when we're angry, right? Like there's so much energy coming through because we have so much cortisol and adrenaline pumping through our body. And these are the neurotransmitters and hormones that are released when the amygdala hijacks. We know often that we need adrenaline and we do need cortisol, but these two are meant in short bursts, right? Like our body releases cortisol when we wake up in the morning to help us wake up and start our day and get out of a deep sleep state. We need adrenaline to like keep us moving and to kind of find our energy point, right? And there's no off switch for those. So what we end up doing is finding ourselves within constant amygdala hijacks that then allow for our body to be in this continuous supply of adrenaline and cortisol. And those, when we're in this chronic state, are going to be so deeply poor for us. They are going to affect us so poorly and cause so much of the disease and the health risks that we see nowadays. This is going to look like heart disease, weakened immune systems, cancers, mental health issues. There's a lot of insulin resistance, diabetes, obesity, sleep problems, insomnia, more muscle tension, jaw aches. We're really just going to see so much of our body deteriorate as we hold on to so much of this anger because we are living within our fight or flight. We are living off of our cortisol, off of our adrenaline, instead of being able to use them little by little when we need them. Most massive thing here is because when we don't have our anger in check and our amygdala fires and it goes through the hijack and we get put into fight or flight, everything that's happening within our body is a survival experience, right? This is telling us we're in deep, imminent danger and we have got to run for the hills or fight for our lives. And the impact that that has on our body is so substantial. And what we've learned is that we are 8 times more likely to suffer a cardiac event within 2.5 hours after an angry outburst. 8 times more likely. That is wild and it is terrible for us. And this is exactly why I'm sharing these things with you, because it's not just about respecting everyone else and being able to keep your cool. That's, of course, a massive part of it. The bigger part of it is how your anger is affecting you. It's literally killing you. Whenever it feels like me learning how to regulate myself and keep my cool is more so for everyone else, this completely debunks that. You suffer. You are the one who is going to be sitting within this, allowing for all of these hormones and neurotransmitters to kind of take root and be coursing through your veins and cause you so much damage. Before we fully move on to how to address this using the SHIFT framework, what I want us to do is really tie in some imagery here. Let's consider a caveman. When they woke up in the morning and they walked down their little cave hallway and they move this massive boulder out of their way and the sunlight comes in and they go out into the world, they didn't have time to focus on what a beautiful sunrise it is. Or to see this lion and be like, oh, maybe it's cute and cuddly and maybe it won't attack me. Maybe it'll be a buddy for us, right? Like, no. They are first and foremost assessing for threats. They need to know that as soon as I move this boulder, there's not a bunch of predators waiting outside of it just to attack me and mine. We need to survive as long as we can, or at least until tomorrow, to try this again. And that's exactly the way that our amygdala focuses. Our amygdala is constantly assessing for threats, and it is more likely to pick up on something that might not be a threat, but think that it is, so that it has a better chance of protecting you. But instead of us worrying about lions attacking us from the outside, we are now worried about our work deadline, making it to events on time, a conflict that we got into with our partner, making ends meet and being financially secure, achieving our goals, right? Like, these types of things are now replacing what really was worth going into fight or flight over. But our brain does not know what the difference, our amygdala does not know the difference. And really, all we can do is remind it that it's different. I don't know that we were ever meant to get to this point of evolution with these very old reptilian innate structures still intact. So that's what I really want you to recognize, is that a lot of the time when we are going through our experiences and we're seeing people wild out, it's because something within their experience had their amygdala fire to such a degree that they felt the need to go into fight or flight at the checkout stand at the grocery store. Right? Somebody bringing a complaint to them at work was enough of a threat to them to go into full-blown fight or flight. And really, all that this means for all of us is that we could all use some work in building up our PFC so that the amygdala doesn't fire as hard. And once it does, it can be remedied. And our ability to not allow our amygdala to fire as hard is going to come from a lot of practice that now we're going to go into using the SHIFT framework. Let's start with our S, our sense of self, right? This is our self-awareness, our self-efficacy. This is where we have to listen to our body and what it needs. This is where we recognize, am I already starting off my day a little bit grumpy? Is my amygdala going to fire more easily? And fun fact, when we are sleep deprived at all, our amygdala fires 60% more easily than it normally would. When our blood sugar is low, that's where hangry comes from, our amygdala overreacts because we're not giving it all of the tools that it needs to view things clearly. Listen to your body. Understand what it needs. Reflect on past times that are like lower risk and allow yourself to listen to your body and see what comes up. Think about the last time that you got upset about something that's more low risk that's not going to, you know, encourage you to go out and change anything about it, right? Consider getting cut off in traffic or something that just felt unfair at, you know, wherever you are. And play it back through and see what happens to your body. Listen to your body as you play that through and see if your breathing starts to get shallow. If you start to feel your heart race or your palms get sweaty and you actually start to like build up this anger, you can really get very good at listening to your body and feeling these things as they come through. And that is a superpower. Our ability to build up our self-awareness is massive, and it's what's going to be the difference between wilding out and losing my shit every time I get upset and being able to pick and choose which experiences in my life are worthy of my putting myself within such a deep level of dysregulation and health risk. Oh, get to know yourself. And that's one of the things that you can do is reflect on these past times and see what comes up for you. From there, we go into our H, our healing. Forgive yourself for the times you didn't know better. Forgive yourself for times you made things worse. Don't excuse them, explain them. Now I know. Now I understand what was happening in my body. Now I understand that my brain was thinking in like 15-minute intervals and I couldn't see anything past that. But now I know what to do with that. And I'm going to work in prevention of this so that later on I don't experience this same heartache. I don't experience the same level of regret. I don't have to sit here and continue forgiving myself for the same thing over and over again anymore. You heal these things. You take accountability with the people in your life. You share with them what you've learned here, and you consume more content that helps you understand it in new and different ways. And you share that with the people around you, not to excuse your behavior or theirs, but to explain them. Our I, our innovation, is going to be the biggest chunk here, right? This is where we change something. To start, we give our brain and our body what they need, which are likely supplements. Things like theanine, magnesium, vitamin B, vitamin D, potassium, a lot of these things that help our body rebuild itself, help our brain function to its best, help us get adequate sleep. We need to be adding in these things because either our diet isn't well-rounded enough or based on our current access to food here in the U.S., processed foods especially, and also even some of our produce, our food just doesn't provide as much of that. So we have to be adding these things in to give ourselves a fighting chance. If you listen to the holiday episode, you learn that adding in omega-3s throughout the week have been clinically proven to reduce aggression anywhere from 28 to 30%. Add in more omega-3s. When it comes to these supplements, I have a resource on my website. It's a completely free download that goes into each supplement, why it's important, why it can help, and where to find it. I've partnered with a company called Seeking Health that's really wonderful, and all of their products are so clean. They're third-party tested. They're really wonderful, and there's a reason why I chose to partner with them in particular. And you have access to all of this on my website. The other thing is going to be sleep hygiene, right? Practicing better sleep hygiene. So that's going to be no eating 3 hours prior to sleep, no working 2 hours prior, no screens 1 hour prior, right? So there's going to be a lot of these like rules that go into play, but they are going to allow for you to get adequate sleep, nourish yourself properly, and really set you up for success. Journaling, meditation, breath work, these are all going to be so incredibly helpful. Some practical innovations that you can start adding in are preparing ahead of time for these things. When you go into certain experiences, especially with the holidays coming up, there's going to be a lot of room for conflict. We also just had our election. There's just massive opportunities for conflict and for all of us to get activated so deeply that there's RPFC never stood a chance, right? Go into these things expecting to be activated and talk yourself through, what am I going to do about them when they do happen? How can I listen to my body well enough to know that the minute I see this family member, I'm probably going to feel a type of way? And okay, how can I pull myself separate and regulate? You can also do something that's called cognitive reappraisal, which is basically allowing for our logic to outweigh our emotions. So when it comes to this, it can be viewed as, okay, yeah, I'm going to go to this dinner. This person's going to say something. It's going to piss me off. And now I'm just like ready. And here's what I'm going to say back to them. That's not what I'm suggesting as innovation here. What I am suggesting, though, is going into it saying, okay, I know that I'm likely to get activated here, but I'm getting activated because they're pushing back on something that I disagree with or that I view differently. How can I approach this differently? And I have these options. I can go in and either set a boundary up front that I will not be discussing it. And then we go down that path of, what does that look like? How do we set boundaries properly? Also have resources on that on my website as well. You can go into it saying, okay, they feel strongly, so do I. I want them to hear me out, so maybe I should try to hear them out. Maybe I can model for them the behavior that I'm expecting to see back so that we can have, you know, a peaceful dialogue. Maybe I can learn something new and different. Maybe this is just an opportunity for the way that I view these things to be that much more deeper ingrained in me because I disagree with their points so deeply. There's so much opportunity here for us to see these things in a different way and get ahead of it and almost anticipate that these things will happen because I'm expecting them to happen. And I already feel that much more in control. When I move forward in any experience, I'm going to make sure that I'm listening to my body. As soon as I recognize what my number one sign is, I am going to excuse myself for 5 minutes and then come back. My first sign is that my heart races and my palms get sweaty. So whenever I'm in an exchange with somebody and that starts happening, whether I'm consciously aware of it or not, that is my sign. And I am absolutely still working on how to keep myself regulated in those moments as well. Listen to what my body is telling me and reset and then come back. It's all about this growing little by little, building these neural pathways, telling our brain that I know that we haven't done this before, but this is safer, I swear, than what I'm doing otherwise, right? Like the familiar here is not necessarily keeping us safe. And it's really just about outsmarting the machine that is our brain. But we can outsmart it by taking care of it, by supplementing it, giving it the nourishment it needs, giving it the sleep it needs, giving us this like ability to offset this energy that's built up in our body through journaling, through meditation, through physical movement. And here's the thing. When our amygdala hijacks and we go into fight or flight, we're supposed to do something with that energy, right? Because according to our physiology, we're supposed to be either fighting or running for our lives. But this is what's happening to us at 8 o'clock in the morning, stuck and trapped in our car on our way to work. Where is that energy supposed to go? And here's where some of the worst advice comes from, which is to go to rage rooms and smash something or throw a pillow or punch a pillow or whatever it is. What that ends up doing is reinforcing to your brain that is what I'm supposed to do with this energy when I get angry. When I go into fight or flight, this is what I'm supposed to do with my body. Neurons that fire together wire together, you guys. So if you tell your body that every time you get angry and you feel all this energy in your body, that I'm supposed to hit with it, and as long as it's not a person, then that's okay. No, you will eventually graduate to hurting and harming people and bigger things, because you are allowing your brain to get really good at doing the wrong thing. So what we do instead are alternatives of releasing that energy. It can be lifting weights. It can be going within a doorframe and kind of pushing up against either sides of that doorframe while also like audibly giving out like a bit of a grumble, mumble, kind of like roar kind of deal. All of this is like our innate primal instinct, right? And so we need something that hones that in versus causes harm. One of the other things that I will always recommend is refraining from alcohol or limiting our consumption of it. Alcohol is a depressant and it's also a neurotoxin. What it does is shut down our PFC faster. That's why we make poor decisions when we're drinking. It's why we tend to get more reactive. We're giving our amygdala the spotlight. We're putting them on the stage. And then we're shocked the next day. Our dopamine gets depleted. We then go through this anxiety. We're regretful. We're building up this into something worse. We're blaming everyone else. We're blaming ourselves. There's just really nothing good that comes of it. And so as you do this work, I really, really suggest you pulling back from alcohol and seeing how much better you feel, how much better you sleep, how much better your brain responds to things, how much your anxiety improves. And I'm not advocating for a full life of sobriety. I'm not even within there either. What I am, though, is very selective in when I do drink. I know that I'm not doing it for the effect, that I'm doing it more so for the flavor. I'm not just like trying to drink and run away from myself. There's also this part that if I view it at all as a need, I don't do it. I don't engage with it. And you have that opportunity too. While I will make a ton of suggestions, it's of course up to you what you do with them. I plan to put together a little bit of an infographic kind of educational thing about alcohol and what it does to our brain and how it contributes to our anger and our aggression and the neurons that fire together, wiring together and all of that. So I will get that ready for you. But in the meantime, it is really just something that I do suggest that we pull back from while we're trying to regulate our emotions and get a hold of our anger. As we do all of these things, we are going to build fortitude. We'll allow for the people who get upset with us to leave the room so that they can regulate and we sit in the discomfort. We don't chase them. We don't shame them. We allow for our logic to fight our emotion. And we get to find something good that can come of it, like that cognitive reappraisal. And the more that we do this, the more we will build that fortitude. We will build this ability to do hard things, deal with hard things when they come up, and we will build more of our self-esteem, that efficacy, our healing. We will continue innovating. That fortitude builds up and builds in. And then we get to that transformation. We repair and we move forward and we do all of this process constantly all over again. Here's where I want to leave us. You are not to blame. You are responsible. And there is so much power that comes from recognizing that responsibility and doing something with it. You can blame other people for getting you angry. That's fine, whatever. It's not going to help you or them. You are still responsible for regulating you. And this is our ability to do that through education, through recognizing like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. I can almost kind of like feel these two parts of my brain fighting each other as these things come through. It's kind of like the angel and devil on our shoulder kind of thing, like from back in the day, like all those cartoons and stuff that we saw of the devil just being like, do it, act on it, la da da. And then the angel being like, well, actually, have you thought this through? And that's kind of like our amygdala fighting with our PFC. But I want you to see both of these structures as really just trying to help us. One of them just, you know, holds all that ink and it has a lot of power. And the other one gets to determine what it does with it. So I hope this has helped for you to conceptualize this and understand yourself more deeply. I really am hoping that this allows for you to stop villainizing your anger, stop villainizing yourself, stop villainizing the ways that you've mismanaged it, and start empowering yourself through these changes, empowering yourself to do something different. In coming episodes, we will be going through some anecdotal theories that I have. As I mentioned last time, it's going to be exciting and new and different. We also have some guests coming on. We'll have my husband, Lydon, coming on and sharing some of his experience with anger and, you know, within his sobriety and all of this. Like, I'm just so very excited for what's to come. And I really hope you continue to tune in. I hope you check out my websites and maybe become a steady friend with me. book a prep call, go through a consultation with me, see really where you're trying to put some effort and energy and where you're not. I'm more than happy to steer you in whatever direction feels right for you. I'm not going to be a provider for everyone, nor can I be, nor should I be, nor do I want to be. I really just want to help you get where you want to go. So I hope you check out my website, check out all these resources, and stay here within my community. If you find yourself at all open to, please rate and comment here. It's really just going to help me get a bigger reach and do exactly what I'm hoping this podcast can do, which is help promote these shifts, this empowerment in all of us. Thank you so much for tuning into Shift Talking with me today. Remember, this is your empowerment, one shift at a time. Stay steady, and I'll see you next time.